KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint. K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove. KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay. KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass. And KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Colorado is joining the Eastern Shoshone Tribe in Wyoming in designating bison as wildlife. Wyoming Public Radio's Olivia Wheats reports.
Earlier this year, the Eastern Shoshone Tribe reclassified bison from being livestock to wildlife in an effort to manage the species less like cattle and more like big game. On Thursday, Colorado's governor signed the Protect Wild Bison Bill, which creates a dual wildlife and livestock designation. Conservation groups say it makes killing bison that cross into Colorado from other states illegal. Jason Baldus is Eastern Shoshone and heads up the Wind River Tribal Buffalo Initiative. He says Colorado's move shows growing public support for bison restoration.
And the importance of people allowing this animal to exist and not be commodified, but really have an opportunity to exist on the landscape.
Jim Magagna with Wyoming Stock Growers says if a similar bill were to be introduced in Wyoming, his group would oppose it.
I think we're a long ways from that. I can't say it'll never happen. Things do change, but I'm not aware of any pressure significant to do that in Wyoming.
Colorado's bill goes into effect in January next year. I'm Olivia Weeds at the Center of the West in Cody.
A Montana-based indigenous group says it's increasing membership this year in a new way. A traveling conference. Western Native Voice recently held the last of about a dozen conferences it hosted since March in tribal communities across the state. Kathleen Shannon has more.
The group offers programs to attendees that focus on leadership development, civic engagement and education, and public policy advocacy. Denise Juno, Montana's former state superintendent of public instruction and a conference keynote speaker, says Native legislators made a lot of headway in this year's session.
There was a sense of pride in seeing what got accomplished through the 12 Native legislators who got elected from all these different communities. And I think really a glimmer of hope about what can happen when people get engaged.
Bills that passed include updates to the Montana Indian Child Welfare Act and a new approach to the missing and murdered Indigenous persons crisis, as well as reauthorization of Native language preservation programs and formal recognition of Indigenous Peoples Day. Juno, an enrolled member of the Mandan Hidatsa tribes of North Dakota, credits her own success in part to growing up with parents in the state legislature and tribal leadership.
Being in those seats of power and speaking truth to power and being engaged at that level really makes a difference for your community, for your state, for the country, and for the people who are around you.
Yellowstone People's Executive Director Shane Doyle is a member of the Apsalika Nation. He says there's a common misconception that tribes across Montana were historically in conflict when evidence shows they were largely friendly.
Despite the enormous and remarkable language diversity here in Montana, the tribes were all able to coalesce over generations and create their own sign language, and it just is a testimony to their stable relations.
I'm Kathleen Shannon.
U.S. Senators Elizabeth Warren and Jeff Merkley and Congresswoman Jill Takuda have reintroduced the Remove the Stain Act. The bill seeks to revoke the Medal of Honor awarded to soldiers for their participation in the Wounded Knee Massacre on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota in 1890, where U.S. soldiers slaughtered hundreds of Lakota men, women, and children. 20 soldiers were awarded the Medal of Honor. According to Senator Warren, Congress has rescinded Medals of Honor before, and the bill would do the same, taking a step toward righting a wrong in history. In a statement, she said, "We cannot be a country that celebrates and rewards horrifying acts of violence against Native people. Congress must recognize how shameful this massacre was and take an important step toward justice for Lakota people." The legislation is supported by a number of tribes and Native organizations. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the American Indian College Fund, providing millions of dollars of scholarships to Native students every year. Applications are accepted through May 31st at collegefund.org or by phone at 800-766-FUND.
Support by the Arctic Encounter Symposium, North America's largest Arctic policy event at the Denaina Convention Center and Anchorage Museum, July 30th to August 1st in Anchorage, Alaska. Registration for this global conversation at arcticencounter.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Everyone needs to be safe on our public spaces and have access to our parks and our trails.
Anchorage's mayor aims to move the city's homeless residents out of green spaces. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, May 27th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, a cruise industry association sues Skagway over changes to how excursions are taxed.
Under Alaska law, we believe that the Skagway ordinance is illegal. It's not appropriate and it should be reversed.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If domestic violence has touched your life, know that you are not alone. You have the power to break free and build a future filled with love and respect. There's hope and help waiting for you. For free and confidential support, visit notaloneak.org to speak to someone who's trained to help. Every Alaskan deserves to feel safe. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
The number of people experiencing homelessness in Anchorage has gone up in recent years. It's common to see makeshift shelters and tents along trails and in parks, especially in the summer. Mayor Suzanne LaFrance says she has a multi-pronged approach to solve the problem. The strategy includes clearing encampments. Alaska Public Media's Hannah Floor takes a look at how that works.
For a while, it was home to 10 people, a little trapezoid of green space between two highways.
If you walk through, you can see some needles on the ground, just wood everywhere, couches in random spots, and then large piles of garbage.
That's Sergeant Kenneth Anglin. He's with the Anchorage Police Department's Community Action Policing Team. Part of his job is to clear out homeless camps. That's what he's doing today on the corner of Lois Drive and Benson Boulevard.
All right, grab that and get it. It's time to leave, okay?
It's called an abatement, moving people out of the places that they've been camping for weeks, months, sometimes years. The city has been doing it for a long time under many different administrations. Mayor Suzanne LaFrance says it's an important part of her homelessness strategy.
It's just not fair for those public spaces to be used indefinitely in a way that prevents other people from enjoying them. Everyone needs to be safe on our public spaces and have access to our parks and our trails.
LaFrance says the homeless camps are a public safety concern since crime tends to increase wherever they pop up. And she says they're unsafe for people living in the camps as well. But she acknowledges that abatement won't solve homelessness.
It's true that we often do see when we abate here, people move a few blocks away. And we still have to keep abating.
She says it's part of a multi-pronged approach towards homelessness that also includes building houses, crisis care, and increasing shelters. But she says abatement is an important public safety tool, one that her administration has used 24 times since she took office last year. It's hard to compare the LaFrance numbers to those of past administrations, because while prior administrations have cleared camps, LaFrance has fewer constraints. Last year, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that it's legal to clear out homeless camps even if people have nowhere else to go. Farina Brown works for Mayor LaFrance.
The LaFrance administration came in. It was right on the tail end of that legal case being settled, which allowed us to move forward with abatement.
So how does abatement work? Well, first, the city keeps track of all the camps around Anchorage. Citizens can also report new camps, and they do, with nearly 3,000 reports so far this year. But there's only one cleanup team at the moment, so it's one abatement at a time. And with way more camps than the city can get to, they have to prioritize. Brown is in charge of deciding which camps get abated when. She says a lot of factors go into that, For example, if an encampment is in the city's greenbelt spaces or trail systems, it gets bumped up. But a bunch of camps meet that criteria.
Someone will call me and say, you didn't abate the camp near my house and I am on the trail system and that is protected land use. You're absolutely right. But the camp that we did abate is also on the trail system.
There are a lot of other considerations. Camps near a school or playground, rec center or daycare, those are also prioritized. And take the camp at Lois and Benson. It was between two major roadways, and there were lots of reports of people nearly getting hit going to and from the camp. Brown says her team took that into account. Once an abatement is scheduled, the Community Action Policing Team puts signs up in the area, letting campers know how long they have to leave. It's usually 10 days. Outreach groups also go in, trying to get people matched up with services like housing and rehab. While shelters are generally full, Brown says there's a lot of coordination ahead of an abatement to make sure that there are a few beds available for anyone who might want one. But she says people do often just end up camping in a different part of the city.
I would love to say that abatement is just going to move everyone that we have a touch point with into shelter or housing. It does not.
At Lois and Benson, the Healthy Spaces team is picking up trash, a damp hoodie, a shower caddy, a single sneaker. They're part of the Anchorage Parks and Rec Department, dedicated to cleaning up homeless encampments. Sometimes bigger camps take more than 2 weeks to clean up, but this one will only take a couple days. That means the Healthy Spaces team will be moving on to another camp, and so will Kenneth Anglin with the Community Action Policing team. It's a responsibility that brings up mixed feelings.
You're glad that some of the citizens around the area don't have to see this or deal with it because some theft and crimes occur in the area.
But then there's the other part.
The not so happy part of it, of removing people from their homes and the things they know.
The LaFrance administration plans to clear as many camps as possible this summer. Right now, they're trying to hire a second Healthy Spaces team to increase that number. In Anchorage, I'm Hannah Floor.
The cruise line industry is suing Skagway over a new policy that makes a controversial change to how the borough taxes excursions sold by cruise companies. The Alaska Desk's Avery Elfelt has the story.
Skagway charges local sales tax on the cost of tours that start and finish in the borough. Historically, that's excluded commission fees that cruise lines slap on top of tour prices in exchange for arranging the excursion. Until now, Skagway this year approved an ordinance that would tweak its tax code to collect taxes on the full price that tourists pay, including the commission. The borough said at the time that the aim was to tax all tours consistently, regardless of whether they're booked in Skagway, online, or from a different location. But the industry says the ordinance violates both state and federal law and risks double taxation and placing, quote, financial strain on cruise passengers. In response, the Cruise Line International Association, one of the industry's largest trade groups, filed a lawsuit against the borough and Alaska State Court over the issue earlier this month. Skagway's borough manager and treasurer are also named as defendants in the suit.
And under Alaska law, we believe that the Skagway ordinance is illegal. It's not appropriate and it should be reversed.
That's Stephen Mahoney. He's an Anchorage-based tax attorney who is not involved in the litigation and therefore is not speaking on behalf of the trade group. But the group referred KHNS to him when asked for more information. Mahoney says the lawsuit is rooted in Skagway's attempt to tax the industry's commission fees, even on tours that are booked from other locations. A European customer could, for instance, purchase a Skagway kayaking tour online from Europe. The Skagway ordinance would tax the commission fee on that sale, even though neither the transaction nor the service of booking the tour happened in Skagway.
So the person who sat in their office, made all the arrangements, made sure the communications occurred, made sure the company understood what was going on, the little bit of margin they take there is now subject to sales tax. And that's problematic, and that's what this lawsuit is about.
The industry group's lawsuit requests compensation for its legal fees and that the ordinance be lifted, among other things. In Skagway, the ordinance has been met with widespread support. Deb Potter, a Skagway Assembly member, welcomed the move at a December meeting.
I think this is great work on the part of our staff to modernize and streamline a way of collecting sales tax from tours that better reflects a modern day tourist.
At least one resident who spoke in favor of the change at the December meeting also emphasized that the multi-billion-dollar industry has deep pockets. She added that cruise lines have a responsibility to support the small community, which hosted more than 1.2 million cruise passengers last year. Skagway's borough manager did not respond to multiple requests for comment. The law firm that represents the borough also did not respond to a request for comment. In Haines, I'm Avery Elfelt.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, middle schoolers in Juneau learn about the science of glacial outburst floods.
It's really cool. We get to learn about something that's like happening right now, because in school, usually you learn about stuff that's like going to happen in the future.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Construction season is here, Alaska. Go to dot.alaska.gov/construction to learn about road, airport, and facilities projects across the state. You can zoom in on projects in your community using the interactive map, view traffic impacts, download data, and look at construction photos that will update all season long. Visit dot.alaska.gov/construction to learn more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
Two men are missing after a skiff they were traveling in sank off the coast of Mokoryuk Monday night, according to Alaska State Troopers. As of this afternoon, troopers said 72-year-old Samuel Shavings and 65-year-old Albert Williams remained missing. A search is ongoing. Troopers said in a statement that three men were in the 10-foot Ocean Pro skiff when it sank in rough waters off the coast of Mokoryuk and Nunavak Island. One man was able to swim to shore. Two local boats from Mokoryuk searched overnight for the missing men the past 2 days, and the Coast Guard planned to launch an aircraft and send a vessel to the area to assist with the search today. Plans by the native village of Kotzebue to sell wind power to its local electric cooperative are on hold. That's after the federal government slashed $150 million in grants for Alaska tribal infrastructure projects earlier this month. KOTZ's Desiree Hagen reports.
The project is a partnership between the tribe and the Alaska Native Health Consortium for 2 1-megawatt wind turbines. The Environmental Protection Agency awarded the grant last year. Chad Nordlum is the energy project manager for the Native Village of Kotzebue.
The new administration basically said that they have had a change in priorities and are trying to pull the funds, or basically have sent us a termination notice.
The funding would have brought more than $150 million to rural communities across the state, from erosion control infrastructure in Kipnuk to plumbing in Hooslia. In all, the EPA plans to cancel almost 800 grants nationwide. That's per court documents filed in late April. The tribe planned to use the turbines to generate energy and revenue for tribal programs. Nordlum says the project is part of a larger tribal initiative to produce renewable energy, then sell the power to Kotzebue Electric Association.
The magic sauce in this whole thing is that it really brings more money into the community. It helps money stay in the community instead of spending, you know, millions of dollars buying diesel fuel.
Nordlum says the tribe worked closely with KEA, who pitched the project to the tribe. KEA can produce almost 30% of its energy from renewable sources, a solar farm, and 2 large wind turbines. The rest comes from diesel generation, with fuel primarily sourced from Canada. Nordlum said it would be a new model for KEA, who gets all of its energy independent of the tribe.
They've always produced their own power, right? They've never bought power from anyone else. But if you look down in the lower 48, that's kind of how the grid is built.
The money earned would fund tribal programs. Those programs include essential community needs like water and sewer improvements, economic development, and more local jobs, according to a press release from the tribe. Here's Nordlum again.
Right now, all of our programs, like I said, are federally funded. They're basically designed in Washington, D.C., and then given to the tribe. So having our own income would actually allow us to design more of our own programs for our people in the way that we think could actually make a difference.
Nordlum and representatives from KEA say producing energy locally could help lessen the effects of potential tariffs and other instabilities in the world market. Nordlum says he's most excited about the economics of renewable projects.
this is an opportunity to produce more energy here, right? Those of us who don't produce oil, this is what we can produce. This is how we can stabilize our prices, even create a more circular economy in our little villages.
Nordlum says the tribe and ANTHC plan to dispute the grant termination. The tribe's solar farm project, which received a $3 million grant from the Department of Energy last year, also lost funding since Trump took office. Nordlum says that grant is also in the negotiation process. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
Juneau voters might be asked whether to implement a new seasonal sales tax system next year to take advantage of the 1.7 million summer cruise ship tourism visitors. It would raise sales taxes in the summer months and lower them in the winter. Some assembly members say the change would allow residents to exempt food and utilities from local taxes while keeping the city's overall sales tax revenue mostly intact. KTOO's Clarice Larson reports.
Juneau currently charges 5% in local sales taxes. That's made up of both permanent and temporary taxes that help pay for general government costs, some specific voter-approved projects, and community priorities. But if voters pass the proposed seasonal sales tax system, consumers would instead pay a 7.5% tax in the summer from April through September, and a 3.5% tax in the winter from October through March. Neil Steininger proposed the new system alongside two other assembly members. At an Assembly Finance Committee meeting on Wednesday, he said it will help lower the cost of living for Juneauites, while also taking greater advantage of the millions of tourists that come to town.
That just makes the most sense. It's easiest setting the seasons as winter and summer as the most kind of logical for what we're trying to accomplish here, which is shifting tax burden between year-round residents and summer visitors.
Steininger says boosting the amount consumers pay in taxes during the summer means the city would take in more money during that period. Then that extra money could be used to offset the cost of exempting food and utilities from taxes. Other Southeast Alaska towns like Ketchikan, Sitka, and Skagway have similar seasonal sales tax structures already in place. The proposal comes as the Assembly looks to increase residential water and sewer rates by 5% annually over the next 5 years. That's to fund critical repairs to the city's water and sewer systems. The proposed food tax exemption would be applied to items under the same definition as the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, better known as SNAP or food stamps. But unlike SNAP, anyone would be eligible for the tax exemption, regardless of income. Many economists say that taxes on food hit low-income people the hardest. Assemblymember Alicia Huskandes agrees.
At the end of the day, when someone's paying their grocery bill and their utility bills, those are just the real cost of living expenses. That's what it costs to exist in the community.
But not everyone is on board with the idea. Assemblymember Wade Bryson was concerned it would negatively impact local business owners like himself.
One business has many things that service it, and if you raise the cost of every single one of those services, you get a greater increase in cost on that business.
He found a particular issue with how large the tax jump between the seasons would be.
We're going to mess up the tax rate. We're going to make it complicated. We're going to make a burden on the local businesses. So I don't see how raising the cost for 99% of our businesses in our community doesn't have a negative consequence for the cost of living.
Even if the Assembly doesn't move forward with bringing the seasonal sales tax question to voters, a new Juneau advocacy group called the Affordable Juneau Coalition is currently collecting signatures to exempt essential foods and residential utilities from sales tax. But that proposal doesn't have a mechanism for recouping the loss in sales tax revenue to the city's budget, meaning the city would likely have to cut back on spending to make up for the lost revenue. The proposed seasonal rates aren't final. The Assembly has until late July to take public testimony and decide whether to put the question on the ballot. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing cargo transportation to 9 Alaska communities. NAC offers options including cargo charters to get freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. If domestic violence has touched your life, know that you are not alone. You have the power to break free and build a future filled with love and respect. There's hope and help waiting for you. For free and confidential support, visit notaloneak.org to speak to someone who's trained to help. Every Alaskan deserves to feel safe. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
All NOAA weather radio sites in Southeast Alaska will be down today through Thursday while broadcast equipment is being upgraded. Andrew Park with the National Weather Service says many Juneau meteorologists will be forecasting out of the Anchorage office during that time.
So our office is going to be down in Juneau locally. That means our radio weather is going to be out as well. We are working with partners to try to figure out how we're going to get messaging out on our radios or the VHF 16, but our radio systems will not be online and be offline for a few days until our systems come back online.
Park says those tuning in to NOAA Weather Radio during this period will hear a timestamp. A recorded message explaining the reason for the outage and alternative ways of getting forecasts will air once an hour. Park says forecasts will still be updated on the NOAA website and Facebook page, and there will be staff in the Juneau office to answer phone calls. Other sources of weather information include local radio stations. In the event of significant events, the Weather Service will work with the U.S. Coast Guard to have information transmitted over Emergency Channel 16. Well, a teacher in Juneau's Mendenhall Valley is bringing current glacial outburst flood science to middle schoolers. Students completed projects on the annual flood that came close to inundating Thunder Mountain Middle School last year. KTOO's Alex Solomon shares this story from the classroom.
Thunder Mountain Middle School sits beside the Mendenhall River, which has surged over its banks and devastated homes in the valley over the past 2 years. Eighth grader Vivian Esmail just learned why.
The root problem is, well, it's the suicide basin, which is between the Mendenhall Glacier. It's like a little area where water can build up.
She explains that the basin hasn't always filled with water, and the community hasn't always flooded.
And the reason why it formed in the first place is because global warming, as we all know, has been melting down the glaciers.
She describes how rain and glacial meltwater collect in the basin over the spring and summer, causing pressure to build up against the ice.
And then at once, it like can burst through like an entire large amount of water. That's how these floodings are happening and why they're happening yearly.
Esmail learned this in Jess Stanley's earth science class. Most students said they didn't know what a glacial outburst flood was before taking the class.
I came in absolutely clueless. I'm surprised I didn't even know about this stuff in the first place.
Now, they all know about the science behind how it happens and what's being done to protect their school and neighborhoods. The students mapped the river, plotted rainfall and snowpack, and learned about how the melting Mendenhall Glacier affects downstream communities. Local scientists even visited their class and walked them down to the river. Stanley says this was her first year teaching earth science at the middle school. Her goal was to engage the students on a topic that was close to home.
I just wanted to have an opportunity for the kids to learn something place-based, something that's here, right, literally in the backyard of our school.
That approach to teaching about the climate has clearly made an impression on the students. Allie Simonson is a seventh grader in the class.
I think it's really cool we get to learn about something that's like happening right now, because in school usually you learn about stuff that's like going to happen in the future or happened in the past.
Now, when the students gaze out the big picture window in the school's common area, they see bulldozers and a huge pile of sand by the river. The city is extending the levee further downstream to protect their school along with several businesses and homes from possible floods that could be higher than those in the past. Stanley says a row of trees is getting chopped down near the track. And a gravel road has gone in for heavy machines to build the HESCO barriers that make up the levee. Ryder McMillan, an eighth grader, says the class learned about that project, too.
We talked a lot about HESCO barriers and how they're being built, and the most interesting fact that I learned was that they're really expensive to build, and you wouldn't assume that because you think they're just like little green blocks with a bunch of sand in them.
In their notebooks, the students have sketched HESCO barriers, including the small outflow pipes to drain rainwater. They've also written their lingering questions about glacial outburst flooding, some that adults don't have answers to yet. Here's Esmail again.
Nobody really knows what we're going to do to permanently fix the solution with the suicide basin flooding yet. Of course, we have those HESCO barriers up, but besides that, people are still working on it. People are still making ideas, and that's going to take a while.
In the meantime, Esmail says to try to prepare for floods as much as possible. The students are taking what they've learned beyond the classroom. They're making posters about how Valley residents can prepare for floods, featuring QR codes that link to more information. They plan to tack them up around town this summer. The kids say to pack an emergency kit, sign up for the city's emergency alerts, and when the floodwater comes, don't swim in it. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
Thank you very much, Alaska News Nightly. We will be having live coverage of the Aleutians East Borough School District School Board. They're coming up live at 6:30, so hold on to your seats. It's coming soon. APradio.org, that's the place for agendas and packets. Got a link right to the school district. To jump into 90s after the news a little bit early, right there. The mouth that is smashed. Smash mouth. Coming up, we'll probably get a little bit of Vanilla Ice. You're welcome.
Yo, Vanilla, kick it one time, boy.
To the Republic, which it stands,
one nation under God, indivisible. Liberty and justice.
I know there's a flag right there.
Roll call. Next time,
Brenda will be here soon. Hillary?
Here.
Carla?
Here.
Rita?
Here.
Rhea?
Here.
Carly?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Perfect. Others in attendance online, who do we have?
We have Karen Ravenscroft, KSDP, Austin Roof, Lisa Pierce, David Nielsen, Matt Brown, and Mike Franklin. And I believe that's everybody.
How about in the King Cove conference room?
In the conference room here is Radio Tech, Mike Franklin, Karen Keck, and Lynette Mack.
Thank you.
All
I get approval agenda.
I'll second.
Roll call.
Carlene?
Yes.
Rayette?
Yes.
Rita?
Yes.
Carla?
Yes.
Hillary?
Yes.
Amy?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Are there any public comments on agenda items? Approval of minutes for the April 22nd, 2025 regular meeting minutes.
I'll move it. Accept the minutes.
I'll second.
Roll call.
Hillary?
Yes.
Rita?
Yes.
Amy?
Yes.
Rhea?
Yes.
Carlene?
Yes.
Carla?
Yes.
Motion carries.
You student report. It looks like Morgan is here, but her report is in the packet. The superintendent's report.
Hello, Madam President. Thank you very much. Distinguished members of the board, audience. Beautiful May to close out the school year. Brenda's in attendance.
Thanks.
We were invited, is the nice way to put it, to participate in the school improvement plan at Sandpoint School. It's actually mandated by Department of Education. But it turned out to be a really great process. I think that myself and a number of teachers and some community members went through to just look at our data and reflect on what's going really well in our community and what things we can improve on at the school. And I think the results were really great for really things we could learn district-wide, not just for Sandpoint School. One of the documents that we had to create as a part of this process was called the Big Four Conclusions. So I just wanted to read those to you. Improve attendance for both students and staff. Establish a specialist position to manage school improvement systems and staff training. Introduce in-school activities and real-world learning projects to promote positive school engagement for our kids. And use data to build systems for continued training of classified staff and established student behavioral and academic interventions. And again, looking around the district, I think these four, these big four conclusions really can sum up where we're headed for the whole district. And so a lot of the summer projects that I'm working on and a lot of things that we're working on already for next year are to improve those things, improving both staff and student attendance, having someone to manage these systems that we're building, managing them is realizing part of our, we just have a capacity issue, which is limiting their success. And then getting more real world activities to really make school more engaging for all of our students. With a specific focus on training next year for our wonderful classified staff, who we often throw into really challenging roles with students and with staff members and really don't give them a whole lot of training. And it's what we put them, I think, in really unfair positions. And so that's going to be a big focus for us moving forward is helping our classified staff become, treat them like the professionals that they are and give them some real good training. So that was a really great process to go through. Wasn't the conclusions weren't always what we hoped for, but that's where we learn and have new systems to grow. So if you look at some of the summer academic projects that I have listed in my report, a lot of them pertain to building those. So we will be beginning to work on our training for our new ELA curriculum for K-5, the open court reading. I've already revised our MTSS framework and we'll fit that into the new curriculum. We'll talk about this a little bit more later, but Matt Brown did a great job creating a an activities, a new activities handbook for our district, which I just helped revise a little bit. And that's going to really help us just make expectations super clear moving forward. And I think ultimately make our activities program more engaging for everybody. He also created a coaching handbook, which will help with that. And I just haven't had a chance to revise that one yet. And then, of course, planning already for August. So even though we're closing up the year now, we're already doing a lot of planning for next year based on those data points that we learned. As you know, this year I took over the federal programs and grant coordinator position, which I was really happy to do. Again, that was a position where I think having the superintendent in that position is really helpful because I see more intimately how we're using our funds and where our real needs are. So although it was a challenge at times, I've been pretty busy the last month. And unfortunately, hopefully that hasn't taken my attention away from other things. I think in the long run, it's really worthwhile that I took on that position so I better understand what's actually happening and what's not happening. So I have a list in my report. I won't go kind of in the last month, the grants that have been submitted. Most have been approved, a couple still waiting on approval. And then this Friday, there's a big competitive grant that I'm working on. It's the CLSD grant, but it's totally different from our previous one. It's the 2024 CLSD grant. Again, it's a competitive grant. I'm working hard on it and see if we get it. But if we do, the focus will be those same things I talked about before. Better training for our classified staff, a specialist who can really make sure we're following through on the systems we're using, and better use of data to guide our instruction. So the last part of it that I'm really excited about, that I will work on really hard even if we don't get the grant, is one thing we realized in reflection on the Sandpoint School Improvement Project is that we all know this, we have amazing support in our communities. We have great parents, we have lovely kids, we also have APIA who supports our schools. We have Eastern Aleutian tribes who support our schools. We have all the local tribes who do a great job supporting our schools and our community. We have the corporation who's helped out. We, Trident will help us with events. So we have all these amazing organizations, all want to support our kids. And yet they do, this is the one critical thing I'm going to say, they tend to work in silos. And so one of the core parts of this grant that I'm writing is to see if we can find a way to have a more unified vision for our kids and our communities and try to bring those entities together. So whether or not we get the grant, that's going to be a focus for me for next year, because we all know that if there's one thing that can bring us all together, it's our school and our kids. So that's been really fun working on that one. I'm not going to go deep into the news from Juneau unless anybody has specific questions. In short, the great news is that HB 57, which included a $700 increase to the BSA, a permanent increase to the BSA, was passed, then vetoed by the governor, and then his veto was overridden by the legislature. So it's the strongest majority we've seen among our legislators in a long time to support public education. That's the good news. So right now in law, there's a $700 increase to the BSA. The cautionary news is that the governor could still line veto that increase or any funding to education. Of course, then there could be an override of that, but that wouldn't happen until January probably. So I'm really encouraged by our legislators' support for public education. But if you hear me still cautious about that we're all good now, it's because the governor directly, this is public, so I can say this here, the governor directly in a meeting with the superintendent said that he would veto the increase. That's why I'm cautious, why I'm not just celebrating at this time. But increase or not, we're in good shape and we're gonna have a great program for our kids. I'm gonna table the activities calendar because it actually is an agenda item later on. So I'll just briefly talk about the school connectedness survey that we've been taking every year for the last couple of years. We got the results, and there's a link in there that you can look at the detailed results. I'd be happy to address any part of it, but I can summarize in general. We get very high scores all around on how safe and caring our school environments are. I think that's no surprise. I think our kids feel loved. Our communities care for them. And that really is the most important thing, I think, to lay a foundation. Again, this came up last year as well. Cultural connections and school and family partnerships got lower scores for us than I'm happy with. And so that's going to be a focus moving forward for us, making sure that our families feel not just connected to the events at the school, but feel like they have a real voice in change and a voice in the school. So that's the biggest thing that stood out is high scores in care, lower scores than I think any of us are comfortable with, and how connected our families feel to the schools. So we know that's something we need to work on. I have a list of summer facility projects there. It's going to be a really busy, wonderful summer for our facilities. The Sandpoint School major maintenance project has already begun. The locker rooms have already been gutted and ready to be renovated. Really exciting. Soon we'll have two big projects, the playground project and the water line replacement here at King Cove. And then we have a number of other, you know, projects that I've listed there in the packet. I'm here in King Cove this week. I'll come back on the ferry to Sandpoint. Really happy to be here to help close out the year and celebrate all the great end of the year things here in King Cove. Always end with gratitudes, and I'd be happy to answer any questions about anything. And that's, you know, having gone to two more graduations in this district and a number of family events, it's just, I've been in a lot of communities in my career. I've said this a lot of times, and I've never been in a place with community support and family support that's this warm and this sincere. So I normally like to have my gratitudes be real specific people, but today, actually, you know, end of the year, I think I just want to thank our parents and grandparents and aunties and uncles who, obviously, we know their support of the kids is the foundation of their education. So super appreciative of being here in these communities. Happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions on the report?
I lost my question was.
Amy has a question.
I was just wondering something, and now I lost it.
I'll show you.
But the part where you talk about a specialist, that's what it was. A specialist, is that somebody that you're going to like hire? Or, I mean, when it's listed as a specialist and I see the duties, I think of just the counselor position. And why wouldn't that just, you know, would we just do that again?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now we don't have someone whose specific job is to manage our MTSS system. Is that redundant? Is the last S in MTSS system?
Okay. Would that be somebody you hire, though, or just like an extra duty for somebody?
So if we were to get this grant, we would have the funding to hire a full-time position, really, who could fill that role. Before I was here, I think we had a reading specialist. Ms. Schaefer, maybe. And so it would be a position like that. It would be a full-time position overseeing, you know, the whole MTSS program.
Okay.
We could certainly create, you know, like you just said, Amy, an extra duty position. We don't currently have that, you know, budgeted for that, but if we had the BSA increase, we could certainly make that an extra duty position for one of our current employees.
Okay. That was my question. Thank you.
Yep.
Is that an admin style position, like something that would be done in the district office or at one of the sites separately, or?
Yeah, so it would be, the way I envision it is a district wide position, because it really is a district wide MTSS system. And it would be someone who could manage and support that across the district, which would include training for classified staff, training for teachers, managing any interventions, and probably most importantly, from what we've seen now, analyzing the data and to see how our programs are working. So it's a done right. It is a full-time job that we would want someone who has a real background in analyzing data or a background in literacy instruction. it wouldn't just be, it wouldn't be something that we would just want anybody to pick up and learn on the go. It's a really important, really challenging position. So the idea would be that we'd get this grant and we could actually hire somebody, an expert in that position to help us. Second to that, like what Amy was saying, we could, you know, just to have someone in an extra duty contract to do some of that, maybe like to maybe help us with our data collection or, you know, be there for support. Because otherwise it'll be another duty probably falling on me, which I think I'd be capable of, but probably I couldn't give full time to, obviously. Again, fingers crossed this grant will come through or the BSA increase will come through. And then we'll see our second choice after that.
And thank you. Are there any other questions?
But if I could just add one, sorry, if I could just speak to it. I mean, one of the things we found in our school improvement plan reflection, I'll put it bluntly, our teachers do a great job teaching reading and our kids are not growing at the rate we'd like them to. So that's a conundrum. Like that was a challenge. Like why are our kids not growing at the rate we'd like them to, if in fact our teachers are doing a good job, which from my observations, they are. Well, two things emerged real quickly. One is just attendance challenges, both on the student side and the teacher side. And that just led to some inconsistency in our instruction. And the other one is we had systems in place, but there was no one managing the system. So it was a little discombobulated. There wasn't consistency to the systems either. So I think having someone, that's why this position I think would be important, is one, to reflect on our reading instruction to make sure we are doing a good job in it. But secondly, just to have consistency in our programs.
Someone who would work well with parents.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And so, you know, and of course, some of that inconsistency is that we've had a lot of turnover in teachers, right? And that's something that has been unavoidable, except now with the work with, you know, our Grow Your Own and having a lot more really qualified local teachers, hopefully we're solving that problem. Right? This is the next step in consistency, I think. Thanks for letting me share a little bit more about that.
Thank you. next step is district correspondence. Accutan, Karen, you're up first. But...
Good evening, guys. Looks like you have some sunshine too, huh?
Good evening.
Yeah, we had a nice warm day today. The sun was out all day and we did a community cleanup. So I actually got some sun, which was nice. So if you looked over the letter that I wrote, I'll just highlight the things that happened over the last month. We've had quite a bit of community involvement. We had someone from Trident come in and show us how to build an ROV. We've had these kits for a while, I think it was 2020. The teachers at the time, the Barnetts, bought these with the fisheries grant, and they were never able to assemble them because we're missing a few parts. But so we got that assembled. We haven't been able to drive them yet. We need to get a different connector for our camera. But so that was pretty cool to see. And then my mom, she came in and taught the kids how to make kulich, which is Easter bread. I really liked her idea to have it like a baking show. She baked kulich over the weekend so that when they were making the dough, because you know how long it takes to make bread. Mm. It takes a long time for the dough to rise. So she had kulich ready. So like the kids made the dough, kneaded it, and, you know, put it in the cans to bake. And my mom had kulich, like, oh, here you go. Here's a kulich and you get to decorate it and take it home that day. And it turns out we made enough kulich to hand out to everybody in town. So that was a bonus of the kulich. And then we had our two big trips go off without a hitch, actually, which was amazing. The upper class, they were able to make it out when scheduled, they made it to Anchorage for NYO and to Juneau and Sitka. And sounds like they had a lot of fun. They sent a lot of photos back and it was a good trip. And then during that time, myself and several of the younger kids' parents, we went over to Akun so that the younger kids didn't feel left out. It was kind of like a mini fisheries trip, we called it, and we did a lot of beach cleanup there in Akun, and we were able to construct an art installation that we were going to keep here at the school. It's an octopus that we named Ollie, for short, Oliver. And then we also got a bunch of buoys, big plastic buoys from the beach that we're painting into like different kinds of animals that we'll also create an art installation with. And then we had our science fair. We held our science fair on Friday, May 16th, and we did a gallery walk with that. And all the parents ended up showing up, you know, and it was really great. The kids were so proud of their work. They worked, like, I think it was 14 to 10 days on their science projects. And yeah, you can see how excited they were for that Friday to set up in the gym. I've included photos of all this stuff in the packet. And then, oh, this last week, we had Linda Robinson from Unalaska come over. I met her last year, and I had her zoom in for our career fair at the beginning of the year. She is a piano teacher on top of being a photographer and a small business owner and whatever, but we had her she was able to do virtual piano lessons last year, last fall with 8 of our kids. We had, I think it was 5 weeks of virtual piano lessons, and the kids performed songs for the Christmas program. So the kids knew her, and she was able to come over last week for music immersion, and she taught rhythm, ear training, and music appreciation, as well as music creation. And she helped us compose a song of our own, which is kind of she said it could be our theme song. And it's just it's pretty simple. It's called The Heart of Accutan. I don't know if any of you are on Facebook, but there's a video of it on Facebook. I don't have the lyrics on the letter, but it's really adorable. And the kids did a great job last week. I'll have to, I don't know, if you want to see it, just send me a message and I'll make sure you get a copy of the video of the song. It's really cute, really, really cute. And we had a great end of the year program. We didn't have any graduates this year from any grade, so I wanted it to be more centered around the kids and their accomplishments. And I had a great idea of this art sculpture that you would spray paint gold so it looks like a trophy. And I'm like, oh, if we have these trophies, it could be and their award or trophy for the end of the year. And it turned into a kids' choice award. So I had the students vote for all their classmates what they thought they should get, you know, what awards they should get. So that was a lot of fun. I think everybody had a good time. And this week, yeah, we've got regalia sewing going on in the library for several of the students who are in the dance group. They're sewing their own regalia this week. Today, our first day back for the week, it was a beautiful day, so Jacob Mark took the kids out for a hike, and then we did community cleanup this afternoon. So I think we're all ready for summer vacation.
Right, thank you. Does anybody have any questions?
really like your Kids' Choice Awards thing. That sounds fun. Sounds like a fun project.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And then I can send anybody who wants to hear it, the theme song that we created last week.
All right, thank you. Next is Accutan. I mean, sorry, false pass. Matt.
Yeah, we want to hear it again.